You're going to love my next guest. David Wood is on the show. David left his cushy Park Avenue job 20 years ago to build the world's largest coaching business. He became number one on Google for life coaching, serving an audience of 150,000 coaches and coaching thousands of hours across 12 countries. He is the author of Get Paid for Who You Are, with foreword by Jack Canfield, Chicken Soup for the Soul guy. He was nominated to the exclusive Transformational Leadership Council, along thought leaders such as Don Miguel Ríos, John Gray, and Marianne Williamson. You do not want to miss this show with David Wood, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the top-rated Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast. Top-rated because of you, the listener and supporter. If you take a moment, give us that five-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, we sure would appreciate it. Big shout-out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, remember this. You are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep up the fantastic work. Do you want to keep your troops safer? The frontline personnel? Then you have to check out Detecticam. This amazing and innovative company is protecting our first responders by offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of their hands, detecting illicit drugs, explosives. This application-based technology is a must-have. Head over to cjevolution.com. See the link to Detecticam. On to David Wood. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm very excited to have my next guest on the show. Now, Jack Canfield has said this of the following guest: David walks his talk. I love his willingness to put himself in the fire and do what it takes to make that next step. David Wood, he's a high-performance coach and founder of Focus.CEO. He's a former actuary, which I'm dying to hear about that. He built the world's largest coaching business, becoming the number one Google for life coaching and coaching thousands of hours in 12 countries around the globe. And we're going to pick his brain. He's going to give you some nuggets of wisdom to how to live your best life. David, are you there, sir?
I am, Patrick, and I feel very welcomed. So thank you for that warm welcome.
Well, I thank you. I appreciate it. It's an honor having you on the show. We were talking just a little bit before we got started. So many things I want to talk about in our time, David. But the one thing I hit, again, before we got started, is you talk a lot, your main topic is you talk about the mouse in the room. You talk about, because the elephant isn't the only animal in the room, and this talks about leadership and taking those chances to become your best self. Can you elaborate on that? Because I think it's great. Very few of us ever talk about the mouse, but there is one in there.
There is. Yeah, I'm writing a book with my co-author, Shane Alliss, called Name That Mouse. Yeah. And I think how it came about is I grew up in a country town in Australia, and my parents weren't trained in communication, to my knowledge. And so I learned to hide a lot of things. Like if I did something wrong, I would hide it. If I had feelings, I would hide them. It wasn't really a safe place to talk about feelings. If I was angry about something, if there was something I wanted someone to stop, it's hard to, you know, you got power dynamics with your parents. So I grew up the way most people grew up, which is just learning to hide our desires and our tolerations and whatever's going on in our body. In fact, I learned to hide those things from myself.
Yeah.
I dated a tantra teacher in Bali, and I'd say, "How are you feeling?" And she'd say, "Well, I feel a deep resonance in my chest, like a C note echoing out. And then there's a slight tingling in my fingers, and I'm aware." She could talk for 5 minutes about what was going on in her body. And then she'd say to me, "How are you doing?" I'd say, "I'm good." That's all I knew. So when I came to Boulder and I discovered that people were sharing their own experience artfully with others, they were sharing their feelings. "Hey, I noticed I just felt a little sad hearing you tell that story last week."
Yeah.
I just want to name that. That's a mouse.
Wow.
Now, the elephant is obvious. You see it, I see it, no one's saying anything. Let's suppose I showed up to this interview without a shirt, and you didn't say anything, I didn't say anything. That's an obvious elephant in the room. But many creatures are much more subtle. What if I'm late? Let's suppose I'm 3 minutes late to this interview and I don't say anything. I might be thinking, Is he annoyed that I'm late? I'm a little embarrassed that I'm late. Those are two mice, at least. And if I name that mouse with you, hey, I just want to name that I'm late and I apologize and I want to check for impact. How is it for you? Is it a little frustrating or annoying? Yeah. I feel embarrassed about it. Now we can be more connected. You understand that I actually care about it. You get a chance to talk about your mice if you want and share what's coming up for you. We can be on the same page. Then boom, off we go for the interview. Yeah. Much better than having these mice scurry around in the background because they do tend to breed.
Yeah, excellent. And I love what you said about, you made a point of saying, you know, when somebody asks you, you know, how you doing, David? Well, I'm good. Well, you've heard of the saying, you know, good is the enemy of great. And I learned a long time ago that most of the time when people say good, they're really not good. You know, they're kind of far from good, right? And I just love what you said about the mice too. Now you go on to say, you know, you should probably name the mice, right? Can you elaborate on that? Or the mouse?
Yeah. Yeah. If something's going on in me, let's suppose it's a feeling I'm having, maybe I get up on stage and I'm feeling nervous. If I don't say anything about it, it's still possible to give a good speech, but people are probably going to pick up on the fact that I'm nervous. And they might keep thinking, boy, that guy's nervous,
yeah.
instead of listening to what I'm saying. If I name the mouse, hey, I notice I'm nervous. I always am when I get up on stage, but it'll fade in the next few minutes. I'd like to be more connected with you. In fact, I just gave a speech in Miami and I said, one way I like to ground and get more connected is to take a deep breath with my audience. If you're willing, would you stand up and take a breath with me? And we all did that together. Mm-hmm. I said, thank you. I feel more in my body now and I can be here with you and give you some really great info. Yeah. And we were more connected. And if I was nervous after that, they understand. All right, he already told us he's nervous. I don't have to rescue him. He told us he's totally fine. But sometimes just the naming of it is enough to take the power away.
Yeah.
And now I'm good. There's a woman in Boulder who I've been having thoughts recently, wishing that she was single so I could ask her out. And I decided to artfully, hopefully, share that mouse with her. Just name that mouse. Say, hey, I notice I've had thoughts of wishing that you were single because I like you and you seem really interesting and I wonder what could happen. And there's nothing you need to do with that. I support your relationship and I hope it goes really well. And I just want to name it. And I felt so, and she received it really well. She's like, thank you for saying that. There was nothing else to do. And now I feel more connected with her. I feel closer with her because it's named.
Yeah.
Even positive mice, if you withhold them, you create more distance with the other person.
Yeah.
But in naming them, you have a chance to get more connected. And there's also more influence at the end of this maze.
Yeah.
It's not just about feeling good. It's not just about feeling more connected. If you want to be a leader of people, they're not going to trust you unless you are sharing who you are with them. Now, you're not going to go crazy and just go to the boardroom and say, we're going off a cliff. We're freaking out. We're bleeding money. I don't know how to save it. Ah! No, you're not going to do that.
But you want to be vulnerable. To some degree.
But you might go and say, look, some of you might be nervous in this economy. I won't lie to you. So am I. We've got a partial plan. We don't know all the steps to it yet, but we'll work it out together, right? There are ways to do it so that people can get more connected with you without fully collapsing into it.
And I think people, for the most part, you coach thousands of people around the world. And correct me if I'm wrong, David, I think people can smell BS. I think a lot of people like the transparency. Now, I agree with you. You don't want to go into the boardroom and doom and gloom, but I think you can project vulnerability and strength at the same time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to be around the people who are vulnerable. Now, if they're collapsing all the time or they're in victim mode or something
that's
like that, yeah, that doesn't draw me. But if they're just like a man who's willing to just cry and feel his tears and feel the emotions and just own it is a very, very attractive man. And I think weak is the new strong.
Yeah.
So before it's like, all right, we're going to hide, we're going to present a front, and we're going to make sure people don't see weakness. I think we're seeing more and more in our society that the people who are willing to be vulnerable and powerful are attractive.
Yeah.
And we want to be around them. I want to vote for those politicians. I want to buy products from those businesses. I want to do deals with those business owners. I want to date those women. That's a very attractive trait.
Now, do you think that it's, you mentioned your childhood growing up, and I grew up in a child, you know, as a kid of a military family. Do you think, again, you talked to a lot of people, do you think it's harder for men to be more vulnerable than women? Or do you think it's kind of equal now? I mean, again, you talk to a lot of people.
I don't think vulnerability has historically been as rewarded in men as elsewhere. Now, I grew up in an Australian culture,
sure,
as well, which is really about suck it up, you know, don't be
me
a
too,
wuss.
Yeah.
So I think for women, it's more accepted that you mm-hmm. will show vulnerability, and society responds, oh, let me help you. I might help you, or, oh, I feel my heart. Oh, you know, it's a very attractive thing in the feminine. With men, I think we've been sold a false bill of goods.
Agreed. And I think a lot of men think it's a sign of weakness.
Yep.
And I think it's a sign of strength. Like you said, it is perfectly okay to cry. Now, you don't want to be breaking down every minute of the day.
Right.
But I think it's perfectly okay to show vulnerability. Vulnerability is a superpower. I
went and kidnapped my dad once. I read a men's book where a guy did this, and he took his dad away for 3 days camping. And I was like, never done that. I'm 40 something. My dad and I have never had any solid time alone. So I went and kidnapped him. I said, you and me, father and son camp. My mother didn't think we'd last the 3 days. I think everyone was surprised that we did. But on the second last day, I was in the woods crying. I was going through a breakup. I felt really upset. And I thought, David, you're hiding this from your father. This is someone you love and care about, and who loves and cares about you, and you're hiding this. And that was not okay with me. So I went back to the campfire and I sat down, and he was very uncomfortable. He didn't know what to do with my tears. And I said, I just want to know it's okay to cry in front of you. And he started trying to fix. He said, well, I think you're always going to be unhappy, and I just don't know how you're ever going to blah. And I said, Dad, all I want to know is that it's okay to cry in front of you. Now, it took 3 or 4 goes of me standing my ground. And I said, you know what my best friend said when I shared all this with him? And Dad's like, what? He said, you'll work it out. You always do. So I showed my dad a way to win with me, and he got vulnerable. He said something I've never heard in all of my life. He said, I've never known what to say to you because you're too smart for me.
Wow. Wow.
I tell you what, that opened me up. I cried more. I felt so much love for him. I had never, ever suspected that he was just trying to keep up. And the closeness I felt,
I was going to say,
with that interaction. But it started with me being willing to be vulnerable, and then boom. He got there as well.
Why is it so hard for people, David, to, you know, why can't they open up? And I mean, that's probably a broad question, but I mean, a lot of people isolate. You know, I felt myself doing that too, where in the past, not so much anymore, where things are going wrong, I just want to be by myself, because that's how I was conditioned in law enforcement and the military. I'll just deal with it my own way. I'm just going to isolate. That's the last thing we should do, right?
Well, I've done a lot of isolating. I had a rough childhood, had some trauma and tragedy in my childhood, and I grew up very independent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so independent. I could live in the mountains on my own, not be around people. One time in my life, about 15 years ago, I had such severe anxiety that I could not sleep. And I was in India freaking out and not knowing if I was going to make it through the night, because I didn't know what happens when you have this much anxiety. And I ended up coming home in an emergency, got myself back to my apartment, and I could no longer handle things on my own. And it was a very scary experience to reach out to people and say, I need help. I reached out to my mother and said, would you fly here to New York? I'll pay for your ticket. Can you come? And she did. I said to some friends, can you sleep in my apartment? It's very hard for an Australian man to say,
sure,
I can't sleep alone. I had one guy who was 22 years old at the time, and he's a regular guy. And I think he was as homophobic as I was. He was willing to hold me. He'd never held a man before, but he was willing to do it because that's what I needed. And I was, I think one of the blessings of being in such desperate straits is I had to learn to ask for help, and I had to learn to be vulnerable. And now it's a lot easier for me. If I do need help, I could say, hey, I'm struggling. I want someone to cry with, or I could just use being held or whatever. Now it's quite natural, but it took a lot of practice. So I'm here to encourage everybody to get the mini book. We don't have the full book written yet, but we've got a Kickstarter campaign. For $3, you can show us that you want this full book to be written, and you can get, we'll give you the mini book straight away. We're not going to wait until the pledge is met. But you can go to namethatmouse.com, be part of this worldwide movement, and start practicing mouse naming. You don't have to do all of them at once. You don't have to go and confess to every single person that you've transgressed, where you broke the law, if you broke an agreement with your partner, or if you did something that your boss might fire you for. You don't have to name all of these mice at once, but you can start. As you read through the mini book, you'll be like, oh, I got a mouse with this person. Okay. Oh, okay. I got a mouse here. Oh, wait, I got a mirror mouse here. This is something I haven't even admitted to myself. And you can start naming mice. And I find it gets easier and easier and easier. And what happens is you just start gravitating towards bigger and bigger mice.
Yes.
Like, all right, well, I did that one and that went well. I'm going to go and do this one. Oh, here's one from 20 years ago. You know what? I never did apologize to that person. Yeah. I'm feeling inspired. I'm going to go do it.
I love it. And everything you just talked about, David, for the listener out there, is going to be linked up in the show notes. I think it's amazing. Now, you know, the first thing, I mean, I love the message. I love everything you're talking about. But people, I think, in today's society, I think a lot of people out there, they just want things to fall into their lap. You have to put in the work. Right? It's like anything else. If you want to grow and become better, you have to take that first step. And so if you're out there and you're one of those procrastinators, and I used to be too, in order for this to work and in order for you to get to that next level, like David's talking about, you got to take that first step, right?
Yeah. And also I want to say the mini book is 15 pages. You could read this thing in 5 or 10 minutes, be primed, and then go out and start practicing mouse naming with your kids, with your partner, with your customers, with your employees. In fact, share the book. I'm happy for you to do that. Share the mini book with people, share it with your teams and say, let's start being more transparent with each other. Yeah. Let's start using the language. Hey, can I name a mouse with you? Yeah. I just want to do it. My co-author, we were on a call, and this was our first call to discuss the book. And I told her about the concept and she went, can I name a mouse with you? I said, please, you're the first one to name a mouse with me. And she said, well, when we first met, there was some flirtation and, you know, it looked like maybe we might be interested in exploring that. I'm not feeling that now. And if we do go forward, I just want it to be a business relationship and nothing romantic. And I want to know, how is that for you to hear? Wow. I tell you what, it did not feel good to hear. That is not what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear, David, I'm so attracted to you. We should start dating right now. But she got to name that mouse. It took me about 5 minutes to work out how I felt about it. I named that and then we were done. That was it. We're totally complete. Yes, let's have this project just be professional about bringing this to the world. We were on the same page from day one because she named a mouse with me. So I want everyone to start using this language. And my goal is for this to be mainstream. that, you know, you'll meet as a stranger on a Zoom call and they'll be like, can I just name a mouse with you? I just, there's something that annoys me about this format and I just want to name it so I can let that go and be more present. That's my goal. So yeah. I want to drop the link again because I want to be shamelessly promoting this concept. The money actually doesn't matter to me. I love money, but this Kickstarter is really about getting people involved with a movement of mouse naming. So yeah, sure, I want your $3, or I just noticed people have already pledged and it's only been live 3 hours.
It's amazing.
And I saw people are pledging $25 and $100, but yeah, pledge $3 so that we know you care about this and that'll motivate us to write the book. But also, if you really want this movement to grow, share the link, which is namethatmouse.com. You can't forget it. Namethatmouse.com. Share that with other people and say, hey, these guys have got a Kickstarter campaign. I think this could really change the world. Let's get behind it. That's more interesting to me than any money.
Yeah. And I love what you said about it. It applies to everything in our life. You want to make more money? You want to improve your finances? You want to have a better relationship with your spouse or partner? You want to become a better leader? It applies to everything, David, right?
I think it does. If you want more money, there are a couple of ways to go about it. You can be very strategic and do the technical things that will make more money. And you should, like Facebook ads and, you know, I'm going to grow my business. I'm going to do all that. But if you don't grow yourself, you are always going to be limited and you'll never even know how and why.
Yeah.
So I've been 25 years into personal growth. And whenever I discover something mind-blowing, nothing's ever the same again. And I can't imagine going back to the way it was. But if I hadn't gone down that path, I wouldn't know. One thing I believe firmly is that my success, becoming number one on Google for life coaching, being able to work 5 hours a week if I want and still have an amazing home here in Boulder, like all the, and my amazing friends and connection, I think it comes from transparency.
Yeah.
It comes from me taking a risk. Now, not everybody is stuck with me. Some people go, that's too weird. That's too awkward. I'm not interested. And they just float away. But I believe that's the way it's supposed to go. The people who respect that and the people who want to live like that will gravitate towards you. And I say life gets so much better. Plus you'll make more money.
Yeah.
As a bonus.
And I'm a big believer, and I imagine you are. I don't want to assume anything, but I'm a big believer in law of attraction. I'm a big believer in cultivating, because I think everything starts within the 6 inches between your ears. You have to cultivate that correct mindset, because you had to be in that correct mindset, David. You couldn't be in a negative mindset. You couldn't be in a toxic mindset to get to where you are today without cultivating and planting those seeds in your mind, right? That I'm going to do this. I want to help people. I want to give back. But it starts with the mind, right?
Yeah, I think it does. And I'm realizing now that the reason I got here, and I'm still a work in progress, the reason I got this far is because someone pushed me to be transparent. And I didn't want to. They're like, you know, make a list of people you don't feel complete with or that you wouldn't want to see on the street. I'm like, all right, you know, took me a while, made the list. They're like, all right, circle the first one on the list and call them. I said, screw you. I'm not going to call this bully from 20 years ago who really made my life miserable and who I resent. Fortunately, she coached me and she didn't accept a no. And we kept on going until I found a way to name a really big mouse with him. And I tell you what, Patrick, it was unbelievable. I was terrified to make that call. But one of the things she helped me realize is that the primary mouse was, I've hated you for 20 years. And another mouse was, I'd like to let go of that. But as I thought of calling him, the reason I wasn't going to call him is I was worried he would call me an idiot, that he would think I was stupid. And so that was a new mouse to name. Wow. And that's what gave me the freedom to call him. Cause I called and I said, I'm so nervous to call you cause I'm worried you're going to think I'm such an idiot and dickhead. And he got curious. He's like, well, what's going on? Tell me. And so I shared with him what was going on. I said, look, I'm letting go of this. You don't have to do anything. I just wanted to name it so I could let go and move on. And he said, and this is the jerk from school. He said, what could I say or do now to help you or us move forward?
Wow.
I'm like, what? So someone pushed me over and over to be more transparent. And as I did it, I got more freedom. I got more connection. And now it does feel like a way of life. I don't share everything. There's some things I keep private. You know, I broke the law when I was a kid. I don't going to share that with everybody because there's some things I just want to keep private.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it's with someone who matters in my life, and particularly when self-expression is involved, I tend to roll the dice and take a risk. I might get coaching on how to present it in the most artful way. And so listeners, if you're like, look, I want to name these mice, but there's one that's a doozy and I don't know how to do it without losing a lot, reach out to me.
Yeah.
Sometimes coaching can make the difference. You just need the right language or the right insight to realize what's really going on for you. And then you can go and take that risk and name that mouse.
And I love it because I've done that too recently, David. I've called up people and I've, you know, maybe that I believe slighted me or I slighted them. And for me, it was, okay, I'm forgiving you. You know, I'm not going to hold on to this because there's a saying, I'm sure you've heard of it. You know, when you're holding on to bitterness and anger and resentment, it's like drinking poison, waiting for the other person to get sick. The only person it damages is you. So I think it's incredibly, shows incredible vulnerability and strength to make that call. Because most people, you know, they don't do that. They just live with the pain and the bitterness. And that's why I think so many people are stuck in the spot they're in because they refuse to budge. They refuse to, or their fear, you know, maybe they're, and I think that's a lot of it too, is fear.
That's right. And I totally have empathy for that. The mind says, don't share it because it's going to make things worse. And let's just hide that. We'll keep it. And you're right. It's poison. And in this analogy, the mice breed. To use this metaphor,
oh, yeah.
The mice breed. And so what the people who didn't get the push that I got may not know that there are ways to actually connect. Now, you may still get some negative consequences. Your partner may leave you. When I was 18 years old, I got drunk at a party and I cheated on my first girlfriend. And I woke up feeling so bad, and it wasn't just the hangover. And I decided to name a pretty huge mouse with her. In the mini book, we've got illustrations of different mice, and one of them is a confession mouse. And so this was a big confession mouse. And she did exactly what she should have done. She broke up with me. And I had to earn her trust back. Mm-hmm. Now, some people might be like, oh, you shouldn't have told her, that's going to hurt her. And that, you know, you risk the relationship. Yeah, that's right. I risked the relationship because I wanted her to be a choice about who she was in relationship with. And if I didn't give her all the info, then she's not a choice. Mm-hmm. She got false information. So she did break up with me. I had to rent a tuxedo and get on a train for 6 hours carrying a bouquet of roses to go up to where she was. What's that?
That was your penance.
Yeah. Go up and be where she was staying with her parents and apologize and ask what I could do to make it right. I did earn her trust back. And I tell you what, Patrick, that's when I was 18. To my knowledge, I have never been unfaithful, even a kiss or a peck with any partner since, because I learned my lesson from that. And that woman, we ended up getting married.
Wow.
And, you know, we were married for maybe a couple of years and we broke up for really good reasons. And that was about 20, 25 years ago. This week, in fact, in 3 days, I'm flying to New York and I'm going to be staying with her and her new husband and her new family. And I just think that's what's possible out of being willing to be real and put some things on the line. I risked that entire relationship to tell her the truth. And again, I'm not saying you should go and share, you know, do all your confessions overnight, but with the right coaching, I think there's such upside. Wow. And I don't want us to skip over that.
No, I think it's very important. And I just, for the last couple of minutes, I want to talk about, you know, you mentioned, you know, when you were you know, you had to make that call to the bully and you had a coach. And I think Jim Rohn said, you know, you're the average of the five people you surround yourself with. How does that play into all this, brother? Because I really do believe that you need to have the right people in your circle in order to grow. And I think a lot of people, they just settle with, you know, it's like going to the gym with your friend who's a great friend who's overweight. I don't want to go to the gym with my friend, even though I love the guy. I want somebody who's going to kick my butt at the gym. I want a trainer. I want somebody who's going to push me to that next level. So I really do, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. How important is it to surround yourself with the right people? With right people, I'm meaning people like you who are high performance coaches who teach people to get to that next level.
I think you've made a good case. friends of mine, Stuart Emery and Ivan Meissner from BNI Worldwide wrote a book called Who's in Your Room? And I think it's a great little quick read on the importance of surrounding yourself. I mean, look, I've been growing, I think, for the last 20 years. And as I do, my Rolodex changes, you know, the people around me change and I've lost touch with a lot of people from high school. If they're not on the same path as me, entrepreneurially, we might have less to relate to. If they're not doing personal growth, if they're not steeped in meditation, following some teachers, like doing those things, we just tend to drift away. So I'm getting on a plane in 2 days to go and hang out with a buddy of mine, Ezra Firestone from smartmarketer.com. And one of the reasons is he's awesome and I love being around him. But secondly, I get to be around successful, switched on people who don't complain.
Yeah.
I've got one friend from the old days who I've stayed in touch with. She does complain a lot. She's in a lot of victim mode. Like things have happened to her and like things are really rough. Hey, we all get into that space from time to time. She just tends to live there. So I don't pick up the phone very often,
yeah.
You know, and talk because I don't want to be around that.
Yeah.
If someone's in drama, if someone's suffering, I will help them. If they're continually like that and not able to step outside and take ownership and action, it's so hard for me that eventually we'll probably just drift away. Yeah. I'm not saying that if my friends are in trouble, oh, I don't want to talk to you because you're in trouble. It's how you're being. So one of the ways to work out how far you've come is to look at who's around you.
Exactly.
And when I look at the people who call me friend, I sometimes get so proud I could cry.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people, like you said, I mean, you know, and it's tough too, especially with friends and family, because family, I've been in that situation where family, well, you don't love me. No, it's not about love. I just don't like you sometimes. I don't want to be around you. I love you. I want the best for you. Yeah. I just don't like the drama and toxicity because that is poison.
Yeah. This friend who we were on the phone and we've been talking for like 25, 30 minutes. I said, well, it's been good talking with you. I'd like to go and get something else done this afternoon. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up? And she's like, well, you got something better to do than talk to me? And I said, yeah. Yeah. Not for the last 25 minutes. This was great. Now I want to start another cycle. And she said, that's offensive. So we don't talk on the phone anymore. That was my truth. I don't like talking on the phone usually for a long period of time. And by saying that, she got to understand and she could either change and say, oh, okay, I'm fine with short calls. Or she could say, I'm offended and that's fine. But I don't want to get on the phone if I know at the end of every call, my friend's going to be offended. That's not fun for me. So we don't do phone calls very much. I had another guy who was complaining all the time. And I loved this guy. And my coach helped me share that with him and say, hey, I like you. I want to be friends. I want to hang around with you. And it's hard when it feels like complaint all the time. Would you be willing to have, say, 5 minutes of dedicated complaint time and you get all of it out and then we'll go on to positivity? That was the last I heard of that friend.
Well, and to be honest, and you know this, David, then those friends aren't really the close friends or the friends that you need in your circle. And I've lost a lot of friends like that too, where I'm pretty straightforward. Look, I'll be empathetic and I'll be nice about it, but I'll be brutally honest with people and say, look, I just don't want to hear the negativity. And yeah. I lost some friends from that. And, you know, to be quite honest, they probably, you need to be very selfish, in my opinion, of who you allow in your inner circle or your circle of influence, because they're going to make you, or they're going to define who you are going forward.
Yes. And I have a suggestion. Here's a way we can bring the name that mouse concept with the who's in your room concept together. You don't have to go and make a list of people you're going to stop speaking to. And you don't have to make a list of people who you want in your room. You can, it's a good idea, but you don't have to do that. Just start naming your mice. Start being honest with the people in your life. Hey, can I share something that bugs me about something that you do? And then share it. Hey, I have a desire for something in the bedroom. Are you interested? Just start naming your mice and being real with people, and you will find that the people who aren't meant to stick around you will naturally gravitate away, or they might just get angry and not talk to you again. It's not very likely if you do it artfully, but it's possible. And then the people who are meant to be around you are going to gravitate towards you. I still think to this day, the fact that I said to Jack Canfield from Chicken Soup that I would love him to write the foreword to my book, and would he be willing to be a backup behind Richard Branson? Because if Richard Branson said yes, I was going to go with him. That was a risk.
Yes.
And Jack could have said, fuck off.
Yeah.
But what Jack said, well, you're going alphabetically. I understand that, which wow. I thought was hilarious. And then Richard Branson did say no. And Jack did say yes. He was willing to be second, but I had nothing hidden from him. It was all up front. And I'm an evangelist for this. 9 times out of 10, I believe there's upside and a profit, and it's probably worth the downside, particularly if you get the right coaching and you do it artfully. Now, you don't even need to work with me. Right now, you can just go to namethatmouse.com. There's a little video about the movement, and then there's a link to the Kickstarter campaign. $3 minimum, and we'll give you the mini book, and you're off and running. And I would really love it if you are moved by this concept and you want the world to start using the language, can I name a mouse with you? If you want the world to be more transparent, then I'd love you to share namethatmouse.com on social media and say, hey, there's a movement starting here. Go and get part of the campaign, and let's get everybody naming mice left, right, and center.
Amazing information and content. Thank you so much, David Wood, for coming on the show. It's been an honor, sir. Now, website, where can people reach you? You got the focus.ceo website, correct?
Yeah. You can go to focus.ceo. You can also just go to namethatmouse.com.
Okay.
And that'll take you straight to my website. And then if you navigate through the menu, there's a way to get on the phone with me if you're interested in coaching and you want to see if we might be a fit. The short spiel there is I work with the whole person. So you need to be a business owner, ideally, who's already successful, and you want more money, more time off, and who you are in the world matters to you, how you're showing up, because that's the stuff that really gets me going.
And love it.
Namethatmouse.com, you can find a way to explore coaching with me as well.
Really quick, you have a podcast out there that I love. I listened to one episode. I listened to the trailer. I'm going to listen to a couple. It's Tough Conversations Podcast. We've been talking about having tough conversations this whole time.
Right.
It's amazing. So I love the show, brother. That's going to be linked up to the show notes too. David Wood, much success to you in the future, sir. We're not very far from each other. I didn't realize that when we
like 30 minutes.
30 minutes. We need to grab coffee sometime, sir.
So yeah.
Anything I can do for you in the future, please let me know, sir. Have a great day.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.